The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board!
Woo!
We're back here for another episode of the Midwest Swing Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We're part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find all the great Cold Omaha and Zone Coverage stuff at Zone Coverage MN and online at zonecoverage.com. I am your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon_Warren. And I am joined by Tom Schreier at TShreier3, producing, working the keys, spinning the dials, and all that fun stuff. Tom, how's it going?
Doing well.
Good to be back on here again. We had a one-week reprieve because at 3:21 a.m. last Tuesday, we welcomed Harper Elizabeth Warren into the world.
I want the stats. Yep. I want the stats.
8 pounds, 9 ounces, 20 and a half inches. She was 21 and three-quarter inches when we got her measured yesterday, so she is growing like a weed. We will maybe talk about her a little bit more here as we go on. Before we bring on our guest, we do have a friend of the program, Colton Molesky, sitting in the chair next to me. Colton is going to the University of Minnesota Mankato, or no, Minnesota State Mankato.
Yep.
Colton, how can we find you on Twitter?
I am at C Molesky, M-O-L-E-S-K-Y.
So we're going to let Colton chime in wherever he wants to. We do have, from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, calling in from the road, Mike Berardino of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and congratulations on your fine edition, and I very much enjoyed the social media rollout of young Harper. I can only imagine what the ensuing months, years, decades will bring just in terms of social media. It's staggering to think what you could do to show off your lovely young daughter.
Well, she's already stolen my heart, and that's not going to change. it's gotten to the point now where she's up at 3, and I'm just delighted to get up with her. So that's
that'll wear off now.
And it's not drugs. I'm just I'm on endorphins and adrenaline right now.
Well, so. I just think it's now your greatest assignment and responsibility, and you will do great. So and congratulations to you and Mandy, and keep it going.
Yeah, for sure. So you tell me that you are in Cedar Rapids, obviously.
Yes.
Taking care of some family stuff. But there is also a Twins affiliate in Cedar Rapids, and you did take in last night's walk-off win. I got to ask you, how hot is Jermaine Palacio Palacios right now?
Well, he had the walk-off last night, and I don't know that he had a huge game until that moment. I think it was 1-for-5 until that moment. But he got a hold of that one, and then they had fun, as the kids can do, and as they do right up to the majors, where they continue to act like children, with walk-offs at least. So that was good. I was pleased to see Sean Poppin in person, because it's actually his first non-quality start. He was not efficient last night. They had to come out after 5. Some command issues, seem like, but I like the four-pitch mix, and I was surprised to see 93, 94 on the four-seamer pretty easily. And some good changeups. So the Harvard guy is somebody to keep an eye on there. He could pitch his way into prospect status if this keeps up. And, saw Ben Rortvedt make a fine throw to get a base runner. You hear that he can do that. The catcher they got in the second round, high school kid out of Wisconsin. He is struggling at the plate, though, and he's the high chase factor I saw just last night. And some frustration, some visible frustration for him. But you can see good live body, and he had a big hit to get that winning rally started. A sharp ground single, so some signs of life there at the plate for him.
Did you see Luin Diaz, and what do you think of him? I heard he is just an absolute huge man, but in fairly good shape. You know, obviously going to put himself on the map with the power that he has.
Yeah, I saw him looking for him. I'm going to see him a couple more games here before I head back. But, yeah, he is big, but, you know, it's I don't know that he's Kenny Vargas, Miguel Sano big, but he is a big man. I saw him, you know, run the bases a little bit last night, and I didn't think that he was out of shape necessarily, but he's not. Speed will not be his tool. Seemed to have bat speed and seemed to have an idea of the strike zone and turned on a ball for a sharp line single at one point. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the big power in BP here later. And, yeah, they have an interesting group there. I mean, they have some talent up the middle. And Blankenhorn got a hold of a couple of balls last night at third base. Here's a guy they played at second in the past, more third this year, and a kid out of Pennsylvania. And he seems to be looking like a nice pickup there in the fourth round, I believe.
Is Jalen Davis the new answer to Adam Brett Walker in this organization?
Well, that's a lot to put on him, both in terms of the raw power and the swing and miss. I don't know about that, but he does. He is showing the power, and he seems to be a pretty athletic guy. So that's he's wiry strong. Just a little first look at him, really. I've not seen him in the spring. Adam Brett Walker was kind of legendary in both the power, the tape measure, and the strikeout rate, obviously, that continues to hold him back. I don't think the good or the bad is fair to put on Jalen yet.
So they have some fun arms down there in the bullpen. Robinson comes to mind, Tom Hackamer. Did you get to see any of those guys last night?
Saw Hackamer.
Oh, I bet that was fun.
I was sitting right by my own plate, and he can run it up there in the low 90s. What really stood out to me was he's got a really sturdy lower half. He's got the pitcher's hind quarters, as they say, and you wouldn't necessarily think that from a guy who's gimmicky with his release.
Right. You can see that on his Twitter picture, by the way.
He's a college guy too. He's probably going to move fairly quickly if he keeps this up. And, Hildenberger dominated when he was here as a college guy. Didn't walk anybody, basically. There's some walks with Hackamer so far, but he does have swing and miss. He's not a comfortable AB for guys with that angle. And we'll see how he handles lefties as he goes forward, because that's always the thing for those guys who drop down. I saw Vasquez, too, Colton Davis, I believe, who's hard throwing right hander, but Vasquez gave him multi innings left hander, and he seemed to have pitches in his arsenal too, and some giddy up. I did not see Alex Robinson yet, but I'm looking forward to that, because the word is that he too is really nasty from the left side and can run it up there 97, 98 even at times, and a swing and miss slider. So that was good value in the fifth round there. They do have some interesting people here. I could go on, but you hit most of them. And Tommy Watkins, first-time manager, has some kids that he can put his imprint on in a variety of ways, because he's a good baseball man.
Well, let's jump up to the big leagues. Obviously, if you're on the road, not in Baltimore, you're obviously recovering. But I believe, you know, they're five games over now. I think that's tying the high water mark for the season. And, they've just looked more competent this year. We've seen all kinds of articles come out about the defense and how that's kind of buoyed a pitching staff that's got some good things and some bad things. The offense waxes and wanes. Last night they waxed the Orioles, came back from a 5-0 deficit to just smoke them 14-7. Miguel Sano, affectionately known as Miggy Smalls around these parts, has really turned things around. I'm trying to get Kenny Biggs to happen. Miggy Smalls, Kenny Biggs. So, Mike, if you could help me with that, that would be good. that's terrible. I'm sorry. I'm trying to delete that. So Miguel Sano has been obviously red hot. But when you watch this offense, what's the vibe you're getting from it right now? Because right now I feel like it's a team, they beat up on a pretty bad pitcher in Ubaldo Jimenez. But it's just a very sturdy offense, top to bottom, that can give you some production all over the place.
Well, you know, it's going to ebb and flow with young players, right? And so in this recent stretch, until Vargas connected the other night with the game-tying homer, which in the ninth inning, I think something only happened like five times in franchise history in that situation, saving the day off of Herrera. Until that moment, Brandon, I believe in the previous seven games, they scored a total of 15 runs. And then they get the two there, and then they get another one on Polanco's sac fly. And then they've kind of moved. Then they have the rain out the next day. And then a lot of home runs on Sunday, and then craziness at Camden Yards, which can happen. Mm-hmm. So they, when you're down 5-0 at Camden Yards, it's not Coors Field exactly, but it's a fun place to hit. It really does. Even when you're sitting there, it just feels like you're watching a wiffle ball game sometimes. But so that was what they needed to do. Situational hitting was really plaguing them during that seven game downturn. There was some guys frustrated with their inability to get runs home, but obviously they work through that, and talent will generally prevail, and the talent is there. I think it goes without saying that Joe Mauer wasn't going to follow the worst April of his career with the worst May, or else everybody would have been really concerned. He's back to normal, if not better, in May. He's making up for some lost time. He's had a fine May so far. OPS is like, 950 or something, but when they get Dozier rolling as the true power threat that he is, he's had some warning track outs. I think that will set things off even more. Kepler, you just go down the list. Castro has had a long downturn, but he too at least will work in some walks. They're willing to take their walks. Buxton's had another downturn here recently, but at least it's been broken up with a few walks. And they take pride in Grossman, obviously showing them how to take quality plate appearances over and over and over. And if that's the mentality of the offense, that they will work you, that they will get into your bullpen by the sixth inning, and that they will just force you to labor to retire them, that's the kind of thing you want. Just don't give away at bats.
And I think something that you notice this year too is that last night they're down 5-0, but never really put them away. Even 6-2, they still felt like they could maybe get this back with this offense this year. Mm-hmm. Last year, they were probably the only baseball team where you would feel the wind just get shot out of the stadium when they're down 2-0. And so now when this offense has the power, especially really highlighted by last night coming down 5-0 to come back into games, and that they're never really out of a game, that's a really encouraging sign just to see those young guys stepping up at the plate and to see the offense in general turn around.
Yeah, the tweet that I had yesterday was don't lose sight of the ability for Ubaldo to let this team back into the game, and he did exactly that, Mike. I mean, he's pretty bad.
Ubaldo and Ricky Nolasco signed kind of similar deals around the same time.
Matt Garza, too.
Yeah, and Twins wanted Garza. And, it'll be interesting to look back at the end of the deal and just see how big a gap there was between the outlay and then the value accrued. But Ubaldo, he's a shell of what he was at his peak. And, the thing about getting into the Orioles bullpen traditionally is that's not any great shakes, that's a problem for you too. But, Britton obviously on the shelf, and there's other pieces that are amiss. And Buck Showalter, finding out, like every other manager, that you're only as good as the guy that you hand the ball to. And so the Twins just kept piling on. And that, it's probably nice for Molitor to this year not to have to say what he said so many times last year, which was we just couldn't contain them. Well, you could not contain the Twins last night, and they have to feel good about that. They've had these little lulls, like I say, even that recent seven-gamer or the two games at home where they got destroyed by the Red Sox. They've had these little lulls where they had opportunity to fold the tent or at least come back to earth more quickly than we would expect, and or as quickly as we'd expect, and they have not taken those opportunities. So that's how you build belief. That's how young guys – if enough young guys hit their stride at once, then you're talking about something. Now the pitching is another issue, and Hughes' problems and Gibson's problems, and Santiago's going to continue to regress potentially. These are all things that will have to be negotiated.
Mike, we're coming up on almost a full season worth of playing time, 132 games for Robbie Grossman in a Twins uniform, hitting .279, .393 on base, .440 slugging. At some point, he probably has to just become who he is, which is a guy that walks about as much as he strikes out. Do you think he's worming his way into Paul Molitor's heart as a guy who needs to bat, second regularly, maybe a leadoff guy, move Dozier down the order? Do you think he's starting to become that kind of guy for Molitor, or even just, you know, a staple in the lineup?
Well, opportunities he gets from the left side in the meat of the order, and shows that there's not a huge drop off right left for him, then yeah, he'll continue to earn that. I mean, how many times have you seen him, you know, look at strike three this year, much less than last year? That was the big thing that he really worked on this off season and through the spring, which obviously was disjointed at the end with the side issue. But he knew that he had a weakness there. He said, I was way too passive. And even though he put up those really good numbers last year from the right side and was decent from the left side, he knew that he looked at strike three too many times because the results were there. It was a wasted opportunity. So now he's taught himself to spoil some close two-strike pitches that ordinarily he wouldn't have offered at, and that buys him a little more time. And because he's been able to do that a number of times so far, in the end, he gets his way. He really has a great understanding of who he is and what pitches he can get to and what pitches he should lay off of. We knew that when he got here. I remember asking him on his very first interview, which he was kind of circumspect at that point. He wasn't sure he wanted to talk too much, but I remember asking him on video, I mean, what your approach to taking quality at bats, and how much do you hope that could, you know, rub off on younger players? Because he's not an old player by any means, but he's well traveled. And it definitely is he's clearly someone that James Rousen can point to as a model for those younger guys who might at times put themselves in quick 0-2 holes and then expand, and then, you know, you're done.
There's some really fascinating things in his splits as well. Versus righties this year, and you know he dominated lefties last season to the point where he was batting, I think, cleanup at times against them. .299 batting average, .397 on base, .493 slugging. All four of his home runs have come from the left side of the plate. That's an .890 OPS. Against lefties, this is a really, really weird split. .229 average, .449 on base, .314 slugging. So about the weirdest .760 OPS you're ever going to find. If you jump into month by month, he's got a .923 OPS. He's hitting .286 with a .423 on base and a .500 slugging. Now, that's a lot of numbers to digest, but it shows to me that basically every time Paul Molitor has given him the chance, he's answered the call. And yeah, I do think you got to find room for him, whether it's in left or right field, especially against lefties if you're going to sit Kepler or Rosario. Not that either of those things are a long-term plan worth, you know, hitching yourself to. But you got to find a way to get in there just about every day, I think, at this point.
Seems like it. Vargas is another interesting case that we see what he can do when given opportunity. But there's a split developing there that I think would narrow considerably if given more time, and that is he struggled from the right side to the point where, you know, they're hitting for him when it's a left-hander. And I don't like to see that. I'd like to see Kenny Vargas continue to develop his switch hitting threat from both sides as well. Molitor has a number of pieces. It's nice to have options when you make out the lineup. As I wrote the other day, I definitely think that Kepler, and sooner than later, needs to be allowed to play every day, regardless of the handedness, so that he can work through that, because his talent is such that he's not going to be a platoon player. And so I don't think that you want to ingrain those sort of platoon thoughts so early in a player's career. And Eddie Rosario is able to handle lefties and righties fairly equally, but he also chases against everybody. So you don't know where that's going to take him in his career and what that'll mean for his long-term stature here. You know, they're Grossman too. I mean, what the Twins are going to have to ask themselves at some point, if they do fade, Maybe they don't. Maybe they stay right in this thing all the way through. But there will be some contending team, other contending teams potentially, even if they don't fade, they may be tempted in July to trade a Robbie Grossman to another team just because they might feel like they're well-stocked at those spots. That's where knowing your own players better than anyone else would know them is so essential. And like you say, they don't have that much history with them. They only have a year and change. So, Derek Favre was in that front office in Cleveland, and they let him go. They let him go for nothing. They would not add him to the Major League roster on a team that eventually did need outfield help. So all those things kind of make you wonder how it will play out.
Now, we only have about 15 minutes left here, but what, in your estimation, is the biggest difference between backup catchers this year to last year with Chris Jimenez and Juan Centeno?
Well, Juan Centeno just called back to the majors because of the concussion with McCann. That's nice. He made a nice leaping grab and foul ground the other day that popped up on video in the minors. Juan Centeno is serviceable, but Chris Jimenez brings things on and off the field that that I do think elevate him as a backup, and he's the kind of guy that it can be a team spokesman publicly. He can say the right things behind the scenes. He's got the kind. It's what you'd like out of a backup catcher. The backup catcher shouldn't be silent. He's got to add value in ways that he can't because when he's on the bench. But he's a guy that you're not going to lose much of anything, it appears, defensively. And if Castro continues to struggle, you're not going to lose much offensively. So they have I really like that combination, those two. And even if, something were to happen, either of them, the fact that Murphy and Garver are both doing well, or certainly defensively.
Yep.
Garver's hitting better than Murphy, I believe, still at Triple-A. So you're pretty well stocked at top two levels, even having lost Stuart Turner now on the DL. With the Reds in the Rule 5, that's a pretty good turnaround from a fading Suzuki and a Centeno who's really a 4A guy, and what was the cost of that was an investment in Jason Castro for sure, but one that should pay off in terms of the framing and the game calling and the veteran leadership and some home run pop over the course of that contract, and Chris Jimenez was less than $1 million. And, for once, I think he's not going to be sent back to the Indians at some point this year
right.
Because the Twins people really do value him.
Well, they got Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez that they really like over there, too. I think they're pretty well stocked as well. I do want to ask you about Irvin Santana's location. Last time out against Colorado, they were talking about his game against Cleveland. The 1-0 win for the Twins, I believe a Miguel Sano home run in the first inning was the only run scored. But oddly enough, the FS North broadcast said, oh, that's probably his best start of the year. And I thought, really? I mean, the guy had a one-hitter against the White Sox, complete game shutout, with 8 strikeouts and a walk. And you're going to tell me that two-hitting the Indians with 4 strikeouts and 5 walks is his best outing just struck me as odd. Last 2 starts, 9 walks and 7 strikeouts. I felt like he's been misfiring to the point where it just seems like his location is just a little bit scattershot. It almost feels like he's got Hector Santiago, the right-handed version of him going on right now. What are your thoughts on him? Obviously still having a great season and still doing everything you could ask of a veteran pitcher, even when he's struggling. But, what's your diagnosis here?
I think you're right that the walk total is disturbing, and missing his spots, even if it doesn't lead to walks, it shows you that he's not at that 0.66 level anymore in terms of ERA, that he is now right now kind of in a little struggle. And I asked him after his bullpen the other day if there's anything specific that he worked on in terms of the location, and he shook his head and said, no, just a regular bullpen. So I don't know that he feels out of whack mechanically. I got a sense that there may have been some squeezing going on, at least in his mind or the catcher's mind in recent starts. But it's nothing that will affect Irvin. He made a good point. He said it's not going to change anything anyway to complain or to stop the umpire at the end of an inning when you see people do that. Even if it's jovial, it's going to be of limited use many times, and it's just not something you're going to see him do, even if he feels he's getting squeezed or not respected to whatever extent. He says it's on him to adjust, but it's something to watch because he was so good, not just at the start of this year, but going back to the middle of last June, that we did get spoiled, and there was so much swing and miss, especially with the slider. And if he can't spot the fastball and get ahead of you, then it diminishes the swing and miss ability of that slider put away aspect. He can't get you to two strikes to put you away with that slider. Then it's just going to be more laborious, and that Twins don't need that. They need Irvin to be automatic for them as much as possible every fifth day if they're going to hang in this thing.
Speaking of Irvin Santana, you can't mention him without mentioning his shadow, that is Jose Berríos, who's been fantastic through two starts, in a lot of ways carbon copies of each other, and shutting down two very good offenses in Cleveland and Colorado. I thought the Colorado start was absolutely bonkers. 11 strikeouts, one walk, two hits allowed. But for me, as a kind of a stat geek, 19 swinging strikes and 106 pitches, and a lot on his four-seam fastball. You have to be a truly elite pitcher to get a lot of swinging strikes on your fastball. You know, guys that get them otherwise are curves, their changeups, you know, timing pitches or breaking pitches. When you're getting them on a fastball, man, you're dialed in. Is he La Machina now, ready to be La Machina in the big leagues? Do we need to pump the brakes a little bit? I wrote a piece saying keep an eye on his swinging strike rate in the minors, but man alive, he's been just incredible.
No, you couldn't ask for a better rebooting of Berríos at the major league level. We'll see how a start in Baltimore goes for him, but because that's a tough place, obviously, the ball can fly. I do think you'd be getting a little ahead of things to anoint him as this good, you know, automatically every time out. There's going to be some fits and starts. The important thing is that the Twins won't panic, and he doesn't panic, and the fan base doesn't panic, and just let it play out. But you've seen the high end now. You have finally seen what is possible, and I think this will that will silence those who might have been tempted to say, well, really nothing special about him. He was just hyped. No, I don't believe he was hyped. I think that the major leagues can affect people different ways, that everyone's personality is their own, and you don't know exactly how they can roll with the punches or not. He's learning to do that. And here again, having two catchers who can frame for you, especially a guy who seemed to be pitching behind in the count constantly last year. If he gets ahead, he will be able to change eye levels and run out high-end repertoire that will get swings and misses. I don't know if it'll be 20% whiff rate consistently. That's asking quite a bit, but he can miss bats. And, that certainly, as you well know, will take pressure off defense and make everything seem a little bit easier if you can make major league hitters swing and miss.
Well, we can't have a podcast without bringing up this guy, and we'll wrap with this because I want to get you back to your stuff, and we got some Blue Door calling to us here in the studio as well. I know Tom's hungry; I can hear his belly all the way over here. Miguel Sano, how could you not talk about Miguel Sano other than in the intro? So we got to bring him up. Man alive, Miggy Smalls has been incredible. Every ball off his bat seems to be a rocket. You know, he's striking out plenty, walking a lot. He's kind of like the three true outcomes dynamo that everyone thought he might be. I know what I have to say about him, but I gotta hear it straight from you, Mike. How impressed have you been with him? For me, it's been in the clubhouse, because every time he talks about stuff, it's for the team, for my team. And I have to believe it's genuine, because he seems like a pretty good guy. You know, he's gregarious and funny and all that stuff. But I've just been really impressed with him on and off the field this year.
I think those are accurate observations, and I think that no matter who it was that got to him, whether it was Robinson Cano or whether it was Molitor or
Fernando Tatis, maybe.
The game, right? Tatis had him this offseason, spent a lot of time with the former Major League third baseman. But in terms of the what you're saying the right thing and meaning it, and not looking at what I can do purely and putting that ahead of anything that might happen in the bigger picture, which I think when you start 0-9 and you're a young player and you're being forced to play right field, and you're not lighting it up from the beginning. It took him a while to hit home run last year, as I recall. It got sideways in a hurry, and it was hard for him to be himself. Remember when he came back last year from the hamstring, he was dropping pop-ups every other game. I mean, that's how out of whack he was, that even when they put him back at third, he couldn't handle a basic pop-up. He's doing just fine in all facets, and he's saying the right things, and I believe he means them. And, the winning is going to accelerate all of that. It'll make these guys, their strengths will flower even more when they don't feel the necessity to do it all themselves. So that's where Sano is right now. What you've seen here so far is nearly two full months of MVP-level performance, and he'll stay in those conversations, and this will only add confidence. And you don't see the barking with the umpires anymore. Mm-hmm. That was, I believe, holding him back as well last year, at the very least in his head. And I think it was pretty demonstrable that he did not get the benefit of the doubt, certainly on any check swing that I saw for multiple months after the Hirschbeck incident in Kansas City where he got tossed. So that's passed. And this guy has a tremendous discipline, great batting eye. And if those things are allowed to just, if talent itself is allowed to just flow and no side agendas get in the way, there's no reason that with health he can't maintain something like this all the way through. And if he does that, it's going to be very hard for the Twins to fall into any long-term slumps, because the guy is tremendous.
Quick, before we let you go, I got to ask you this. Which side of the infield defensively do you prefer, left or right? Because honestly, I know right would be the easy answer with Maurer and Dozier, but man, Polanco and Sano have been pretty solid.
You mean in all areas?
Yeah, no, just defensively. I mean, obviously grading on a curve, because the arm doesn't matter as much at second base or anything, but if you had to pick one side or the other that you think is better, where are you at?
No, that's like asking, I don't know, I was going to say, that's like asking somebody to say which child they love the most.
Mike, I only have one, so I can't relate to this.
Okay, I have two, so I don't go for that.
Sure.
But, different responsibilities, different skill sets, but I think the important thing is that all four as a unit are adding value and building confidence. Polanco's been the biggest surprise of the group, because I really thought that the errors would pile up quickly and that the throwing would be a bigger issue than it's been. But Maurer there has saved him a number of times when he has gotten off kilter. And, throwing won't be a problem for Sano. It's just purely paying attention and keeping engaged, and he has, and then the range. But, they all four have a chance to impact the game positively in different ways. And so far we've seen many of those ways right before us.
All right, Mike, well, we got to get you on here on a Tuesday with Cody. I know he's pretty excited to do that, so let's see when you're going to be in town again, and we'll do that. Hi, Cody. I know you're listening. So thanks, Mike, so much for joining us from the road, and really appreciate you. We'll see you at Target Field here maybe this weekend.
That'd be great. Now go play with your baby.
Yeah, you got
it.
All right. Thanks for listening to Midwest Swing for Colton Molesky. Thanks for joining us, man. It was really exciting. Got to get you back to Mankato now after the Blue Door.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. For Tom Schreier, I'm Brandon Warren. You've been listening to the Midwest Swing Podcast, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.